Hello and welcome back to the latest episode of the Master of None podcast. I am your host, as always, Stephen Murphy, joined with the regular rugby crew of Sam and Westy. The rain is back, boys. I hope you enjoyed your sun and the summer, because it's over. The lashing rain is back off my window currently. Westy, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Do I have to expand on that?
Give us a little bit.
I played tag rugby down Salt Hill at the weekend. It was a great crack. It was all for a good cause.
Hammy's gone, though. Hammy's gone.
Hammy is gone, unfortunately. Yeah, so it's I injured during lockdown, trying to get back in too quick. And then it kind of went during the week playing, and then it went properly in a bone-curdling scream of my own. So
not bad.
So rehabilitation process begins now.
Was there a big...
No, I'm just not good at pain.
Was there?
There was a beautiful, like, I mean, the step to end all steps, followed by my hamstring tearing it off.
Oh, God.
I think Wesley did hear...
You haven't lived until you've seen an unfit forward step, you know, that's...
Someone watching, Wesley definitely heard this. They thought, I thought Ches and Kobe was in South Africa. That's what they said when they saw the
that's
step.
That's it.
But it's like, no, it's just Wesley. So I think Is the Connor call-up not happening then? Is that postponing the Connor call-up?
Weeks late.
Well, look, probably not this year. We'll have to ease back into it. I'll play a few junior rugby games now, I think, and we'll go on from there.
Yeah, you play a few Eagles games. Maybe, you know, to ease your way back into it. Yeah, exactly. Sam, how is your hamstring?
My hamstring is fine. Yeah, my calf, on the other hand, I went to one rugby game last week, and I said to Westy, I was like, I don't remember hurting it at all, but... It's massive, like a huge big bruise right down the whole length of my calf. Like one of them disgusting kind of greeny brownie bruises. Didn't get a bang or anything, and it was real stiff to walk. So I was like, did I do something really bad to it? Like innocuously or not? But yeah, it's still kind of sore to touch, but I can walk and run and stuff, no problem. So I don't know what to think of that.
I think you're just getting old, guys.
Oh, definitely. Definitely getting old. That year and a half off really didn't help.
Before
that. And now it's like go to one training and it's done. Not sure if we're going to last a season. So if we could have another lockdown in around November to January sort of time.
Don't even joke about it, Sam.
Come back out February into the nice warm weather.
No joking about lockdowns again. I just think Wesley's using his hamstring as an excuse not to play me in tennis again. I think he's running scared. Sam, you've never even played me. You've been running scared for months now. Months.
I'm undefeated in our little group tennis games. So
you haven't played me once.
Yeah, but I played Wesley twice and beat him.
You didn't win the last game. It's our lash and rain and we stopped. That was like 7 months ago. You got scared because you knew I was going to win and you haven't played me since.
Now, I was winning, and the umpire called it's over, but Sam is obviously winning. So
yeah, because that happens in Wimbledon as well. They're just like, oh, you're ahead. It's over. Game over.
That's what happens. In cricket, there's a mathematical equation to work out how many points you would have scored, and they go from that. So, and in softball...
Sam, if you ever mention cricket on my podcast again, you're out, okay?
And in softball, for ties, they count back to the end of the last innings to see who was winning.
Not in tennis, though. So, point invalid. Look, we're not here to talk about me being amazing at tennis. That's for a different podcast. We're here to talk...
Westy said that the sunscreen was in his eyes, though. So, I'm not sure if it's...
I was very sweaty. You know, I was playing into the sun most of the day.
Yeah. Playing tennis against Westy is like playing tennis against Jesus. Because he's got the long hair, the beard. And he was like in the sun. So, he was almost like silhouetted. It was almost magical. It was beautiful in a sense. But then I had to give Jesus an ass whooping. And I did. And it's fine. We'll move on. Lions. Rugby podcast. Lions' first test against South Africa happened on Saturday. Lions came out victorious 22-17. I was on a YouTube show Friday night. I predicted 21-17. Gutted that I missed out by a point on a prediction.
Can I mention that a year ago or so, you were on another podcast as a guest, filling in for, I think it was Keno, and it's like an international.
Oh, yes.
And you said Bundy would be in the Lions, and they laughed you off.
They laughed me off. I said Bundy's going to be a Lion, and there's a guy from Scotland on it, and his reaction was priceless. It was almost as if I said that, like, you know, I was going to be a Lion. I might as well have said that in his reaction. And then, yeah, to be fair, Bundy being selected as a Lion this year was a surprise. It wasn't, like, nailed on, but I'll still take it. Bragging rights.
Of this world.
Yeah. True. Yeah. Maybe. You know. Sometimes I get stuff right. But amazingly enough, Westy, it was a great game. It was fantastic to watch. There was plenty of talking of points. But all anyone's talking about is the two managers. One possibly has a burner account on Twitter, and Warren Gatland is chatting shit in the media. First of all, Westy, do you even know what a burner account is?
I learned what a burner account is yesterday. Thanks
for backdrop. Westy is only 30 years old, but Westy is 60 years old when it comes to technology. Doesn't have Instagram, never checks WhatsApps, never checks Twitter, nothing. So I'm impressed, Westy, that you know what a burner account is. So congrats.
He's like a good dad as well. He keeps us updated with the news from 3 days ago.
Yeah.
He's like, did you guys see this? I was like, yeah, Westy, we all saw that.
Yeah, exactly. But he gets there in the end. He still
I read it in the paper. Do you know it comes in the morning in the Galway Advertiser? That's the article supposed to watch you.
Yeah. But yeah, Westy, it's amazing that that's what people are talking about. But do you think this is just shithousery, as we're calling it, from Gatlin and Razzie? Is this just pure mind games and, you know, using the media the way that they're doing it?
Well, like, I mean, Razzie's had that account, well, had that account since he was in Munster, apparently. So, like, that'd be some really great forward planning from him if he set it up just to fuck with Warren Gatlin. The Gatlin stuff, like, we have heard Gatlin in the media over the last few years. Has been known to rile the media up every now and again. I think he is probably a bit confident after the first win, probably trying to get under Razzie's skin so that they try something a bit like out of the box for the second test. I don't think we should be surprised at all. Like, the media is a huge, huge tool now in a modern game for people to get at each other, get under each other's skin. Everybody preaches about being better than that, but at the end of the day, like, they will say whatever they want in an interview to try and trying on the other manager's skin, even though Razzie's not the head coach. But you know,
I know that's forgetting that. I just keep forgetting that he's not
the water
coach.
Boy.
He's the water boy. Yeah, yeah. But Sam, you know, Gatland last week, leading up to the game, was criticizing the, you know, the TMO being from South Africa. And do we think it worked? You know, a lot of 50-50 calls kind of went Lions' way. You know, are we giving credit to Gatland for this?
I think there's credit where credit's due. I'm not sure if it. It we'll never know if it definitely worked, but I think that you know, at least making people aware of it was going to stop any sort of bias coming from the South African TMO. The fact that the TMO was South African, I think, was a farce to begin with. Vodafone were showcasing the fact that Maro Toje could sign an autograph 5,000 miles away via 5G, and they can't get a guy on a computer somewhere else other than South Africa, or even a non-South African in South Africa at the time, to be TMO. I think that the whole thing was ridiculous, and it smacks of Pro 14. And we've been saying it for years about these sort of semi-half biased kind of refs, almost making up for the fact that they might be portrayed as semi-half biased and doing what the TMO did the last day and giving some 50-50 calls that way. So yeah, I think credit where credit's due. I think that Gatland played that one very well. I think the Razzie one is what, to me, I think what Razzie is doing is what 99% of football managers do, and try and take the heat off their team by just doing something like this burner account, semi kind of coming out of the closet with it and saying like, oh, look here, I'm the burner account. Because what he did was he made it so obvious. Then he started doing the same style of videos, the circle, same exact format of videos from his own account. So he's kind of just outed himself as being that burner account. And I think I saw that he follows Maro Itoje and Alvin Jones, and that's it, which is hilarious. But yeah, playing it through the media, like Westy said, it's part and parcel of rugby these days. Everyone has to, by contractual obligation, do a press conference afterwards and beforehand and release their team at a certain time and give a certain amount of interviews per season and per week. And you know, you can't blame them for playing the media because they have to play the game and they've been forced to play the game. So they might as well use it to their benefit instead of giving stock answers. So I'm kind of happy to see it play out like this. I just worry for, because I love Razzie Erasmus. I think he's an absolute star. I watched the Chasing the Sun last week on waking up early and feeding my baby Judy. So I'm kind of up to date with my Razzie and how he works. And I really just hope he doesn't, almost like Jose Mourinho in soccer, become a parody of himself and just start doing this media thing completely and lose the run of what makes him the greatest, the great coach that he is.
Yeah, the Twitter account that we're talking about, it's Jaco Johan, depending on pronunciations. But the bio at the moment is saying, I am Razzie's voice when he is too nervous to say something himself. watch the space, some good stuff on its way, hashtag burner account. So again, if it, like, what if it's not him, and what if this guy is just playing it so well? Like,
is that not incredible. How you would react if everyone thought you were Razzy Erasmus? You would fuel it, right? Like, you'd be like, oh, I am, yeah, follow me. Like,
yeah, true, yeah. Because like, yesterday this lad had like zero followers. He now has 2,200 followers. So, like, it's working for if it's not Razzy. But, yeah, the style of video, the style of even tweeting. But Razzy retweeting himself is just, the thought of that happening is incredible. It's such a media circus that I love it. But I think Sam 100% right. This is just good. Look, it's good managing in a way. No one's really talking as much as about the game as they should have been. But
Can I ask permission to mention cricket one more time on this podcast?
Please? Sam, you're out. You're out. Yes, okay. Last time ever on this podcast, yes.
Kevin Peterson, who was the former cricket captain of England, but he's from South Africa, really good character. One thing that happened to him, actually, was there was a parody Peterson account going around. I can't remember what, I think it was coming up towards the Ashes of the World Cup, and it really got under his skin. It was getting really annoyed, and there was so much kind of intimate detail that they figured it must have been someone in the change rooms. I think it turned out to be a friend of one of the fellow players, and it caused huge rifts. So I'm wondering, is this fake Razzy actually like undercover for Razzy, but he doesn't know who it is and he's just going with it, and now he's like playing him, and it could all blow up. So yeah, burner accounts, they're dangerous enough.
I've seen Felix Jones being thrown around as a possible... people think it could be someone in the coaching staff, like, you know what I mean, like, that's surrounded by Razzy and just almost like, that this is your job here, I don't care about anything you do coaching wise, you tweet what I say, you tweet, yeah. And that's it.
The formatting of the video is the exact same when Razzy did his own video. It's just it's too funny. Like, I think what he's doing is he's brilliantly taking all the heat off South Africa and allowing them to concentrate on getting revenge this weekend.
Yeah, I tweeted out about questions coming in. Kino tweeted in a question, which I think we've already answered, but Westy, this is Kino's question, which classic Kino fashion is beautifully worded, quite elegant the way it's been worded, nothing that we would come up with. But he said, despite the gritty physicality you'd expect from a Box Lion series, with pre-match TMO outrage and post-match anonymous account retweets, are the two greatest exponents of shithousery sat in the coaches' boxes? What a way to summarize it in a question.
I couldn't have articulated it better myself. It probably is. And again, I think what Sam says, it's not necessarily maybe as malice intentful and kind of getting onto your skin, but maybe it is just a way of taking pressure off the players and getting them to focus on their play rather than having criticism of, you know, certain players not looking fit enough, or certain players out of position, or certain players not being given the ball enough. Razzy's just taking all the media attention on to himself. So it could just be a very, very intelligent way of use of shithousery to take the pressure off his team.
Last thing on this, again, Owen Harrison, aka Overhill Prop, also wrote in question. Should all international directors of rugby / head coaches have Twitter burner accounts? So make it almost, you know, everyone has to have one. How about that? I like it. You know, let's... What would Andy Farrell can't tweet about? Like, oh, the England number 10 shit. You know, like, kind of have a dig at his own son. I think he would. Fact, if we could have.
I know of celebrities who've admitted to having anonymous accounts just to kind of keep up to date with what people are saying about them, but not kind of tweet anything to make it obvious that it's them. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's a few of those, like, players and stuff that have accounts that don't let on that it's them, really, but just kind of keep up to date with things and, you know, like things if they see it or kind of see what people are talking about. But yeah, if Andy Farrell had one, it would be like abusing his son and possibly criticizing John Cooney for no reason. But
yeah, geez, John Cooney looks awful small today. Something, you know, just out of nowhere.
Totally not enough box kicking in that Ulster game.
Yeah. Where is even Connacht?
I hate not knowing what my nine's going to do next. It's really upsetting.
Oh, we could have fun with this all day.
Who player do you think would be the best kind of shit stirrer then?
Oh, I feel like Finlay Beelan would be fantastic at that.
I feel like Finlay does it. I feel like Finlay
uses
people.
Finlay Beelan definitely does it. I'd say Sexton would do it, but Sexton's would all be like really sinister and really like, you know, personal. That would be like crossing the line. Do you know what I mean? Just because he's pissed off at something. I feel like Sexton would definitely.
Really, like.
Yeah, exactly. Look, we should start. We probably should talk about the game. Westy, you know, fantastic win by the Lions, you know, to be down at halftime, have that comeback. Did you see that coming at halftime? I think a lot of people would have said South Africa kind of in control of this game.
Yeah, I didn't really see it coming. I thought obviously it was a very physical encounter in the first half, but I thought the Lions' discipline had kind of really put them behind. And what was it? Was it 12-3 at halftime? I just kind of thought that, again, like I was really impressed at how the Lions turned around, and there must have been some halftime team talk from Alwyn Jones to shore up kind of the silly errors they were making. I mean, I think a lot of the best play we saw from South Africa was in broken play off the back of a Lions mistake. So I think it was really impressive how the Lions screwed that up and kind of came out in the second half and really changed their mindset.
Speaking of Alwyn Jones, 80 minutes played, Westy. I know you were impressed by that.
I was. I mean, I had Alwyn Jones as my Lions captain, you know, 18 months ago. It's amazing to see him come back from an injury so quickly. It's so impressive to see him give the 80 minutes. You know, when he first came back into the squad, we weren't convinced that he would play at all. We were thinking maybe he's just here as a part of a support role. So the fact that he's been able to come back and play so well and lead so well, I think is really impressive. And I think that's probably one of the few positions we can almost guarantee there won't be any change next week.
Sam, how much wider would the winning margin have been if James Ryan played instead of Alwyn Jones?
Oh, I think you can guarantee we would have been 12-3 up at halftime. no doubt about it. But I think Alwyn Jones, I think the comeback story is amazing. I think you could see some sort of epic movie ending to the end of the third test where his arm is literally hanging off, but he's making a last ditch tackle to win it. And he retires a hero at the end of it sort of thing. Like it's, you know, he did dislocate his shoulder 3 weeks ago. We don't know the severity of it. And he could be playing through the pain barrier because he's so close to the end of his career anyway. What a way to go out. And the fact he played 80 minutes gave two big middle fingers up to the entire of Twitter. Like I saw one person the other day being like, isn't 80% fit Alwyn Jones better than 100% fit Ian Henderson? And I was like, Ian Henderson's class, I get that. But how do you know that Alwyn Jones is 80% fit? What is 80% fit? And is any rugby player ever 100% fit? Because no, I'd say like you have zero like knowledge, or you're not privy to the medical side of things. You don't know how fit Alwyn Jones is or how close to being fit Alwyn Jones is. So don't pull 80% out of here and start going on like you're in-depthly aware of knowledge and know that he's coming off after 73 minutes because he can't last the full 80 sort of thing. Like mental, like it was a brilliant performance. I was talking to someone online at halftime saying that, you know, it was rushed back and he wasn't ready. And I was like, what are you talking about? He said, oh, he's been off the boil. And I just said, everyone was off the boil. The entire first half, outside the first 6 minutes, the Lions were off the boil, but that wasn't to do with them not playing well. That was to do with South Africa playing much better in the first half and nullifying anything the Lions tried to do and just keeping them on the back foot.
If Alwyn Jones doesn't, like, if they go on to win it and he's lifting the trophy, as he's lifting it, if he doesn't, like, oh, my shoulder, that's going to be such an opportunity missed by Alwyn Jones, and I hope that he would not do that. But, to refer to the show that I was on Friday night, we were saying, like, you know, if he was to take a knock early and he was to be injured, you know, there would have to be some big questions asked of Gatland as well, of, you know, because we know he doesn't believe in the fairy tale stuff. To risk him and then, you know, put the team at risk as well, if he had have got injured, it would have been, you know, pretty bad. So delighted for the fact that Alwyn Jones got through it healthy. It makes Gatland look good. It takes, as you said, Sam, there's no questions anymore. We know he's 100%, I'm saying, 100% healthy.
How would people have reacted if he went down with a knee injury after 5 minutes?
Yeah.
He'll blame his shoulder, be like, no, he wasn't ready. Like,
he was overcompensating for his shoulder with his knee.
Look, you mentioned penalties early on, Westy. Tom Curry sort of at fault for a few of them. How did you kind of rate his performance overall?
I thought overall it was a fairly decent performance. Having said that, though, I think, again, it's one of the positions that might be questioned. I don't want to say, like, under threat, but it will be something like that. And not necessarily because Curry was overly bad, but just because there is such choice in that position. So we've got to, like, you know, I think when Hamish Watson came on, like, that really did help shore up some of the little gaps and some of the little kind of uncertainties that were within the Lions' pack. So I think Hamish may have given himself a chance to start over Curry. Again, it's not saying that Curry was bad. He wasn't bad. Again, okay, a little bit uneven. You know, Sam said just a second ago, like, but that was all over the place, and that was mainly due to how good the Bucks were playing and how well they took advantage of mistakes. But I do think that maybe we'd see the likes of Watson come in, or you could see maybe some sort of switch go on with Faletau and Conan in the back at number eight. But I think that's kind of unlikely, because I think they are both kind of out and out eights as well. So we could see some sort of shift in the dynamic of the way the back row is going to go in the next game.
Westy, you know, you've, as from a Gatland point of view, you've just won the first test. You know, are you reluctant to try and move things around? Because, you know, as I just said, if you've won, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, I've kind of been thinking about this all day. I think, again, we talked about how good a squad it is overall, how difficult it was to pick our team for the first test. I don't think you'll see massive changes, but I think rotation has probably always been in Gatland's mind. I don't think he ever went out into this tour against South Africa in such a big physical presence, planning on starting the same 15 lads in the three games. I think there was always going to be a slight bit of allocation. Some lads been rested, some lads coming back for the next test. Not necessarily rested, but giving a break and letting someone else, take the starting jersey and having someone then on the bench. I think the fact that South Africa's fitness kind of seemed to get the better of them towards the end, they did seem a little bit lethargic as the game pulled into the last 15 minutes, 10 minutes. I think that will affect now how Gatland is going to view how his game plan is going to work in a second game. I don't think, I don't think anything is nailed on necessarily. I think he's going to have to look at how that game went. He's going to have to try and think how Razzie's going to respond. We could see, we saw very little of, you know, of a fluid game plan from South Africa. You know, we only really had maybe a bit of a game plan in the first half, but they didn't really seem to move the ball that well. Colby, I think, got the ball twice. Willie Larue got the ball once and the try was disallowed. Mapimpi wasn't overly involved. So I think it wouldn't be surprising to see them move to a more dynamic game. And then Gatland would have to compensate that and maybe make a couple of changes. But yeah, I wouldn't, I would be very surprised if there was no changes at all, even if everyone's still fit. And we have a couple of question marks of a couple of players, right? So there could be forced changes and forced combinations that have to come in.
Yeah, we'll get to who we kind of would move around in a second. Sam, do you agree with Westy? South Africa just didn't really look at their sharpest kind of best?
I'm not sure. They definitely looked on top. So the first 6 minutes were frantic and unbelievable, and everyone was talking about how good a game it was. Then South Africa took a foothold, really started to put the pressure on, built up the score by scoring some good penalties, and Bigger missed a penalty, which could have gotten in close, and came to halftime. And I'd said to you, it's not as bad as Twitter would leave you to believe. I think that the Lions were the Lions have been slow starters in every Lions first test I can remember. And I think that that's part and parcel of playing test rugby against a team that, like South Africa, the world champions, who know each other very well. What I did think damaged the box in the second half, the Lions obviously got foothold very quickly, but I think that that change of the front row that was functioning well, I know people had said beforehand it might not have been their first choice front row and that they were bringing the bomb squad on. I think that actually that lost a bit of cohesion in that pack, and they lost the dominance that they had, and that allowed the Lions to really get into it. So I think that the Lions just grew into the game a bit more. Gatland probably did some, analyzing and talked to them at halftime and allowed them to change or do things a little bit differently. And South Africa maybe down to fitness, down to mental strength in terms of out of practice. Could have been anything. They could have just started to feel the pressure after Lions went to the corner and scored that try for Luke Cowan-Dickey. Anything could have happened, but I don't think South Africa were particularly unsharp. I think that there was just two halves, and they were very dominant in the first half, and Lions kind of rose into it and became more dominant in the second half. They also got unlucky with one or two calls. The ref's calls could have gone either way for one or two of them, and they could have gotten tries, and that would have seen the Lions completely out of it. I think in terms of changes from Gatland's point of view, I wouldn't wholesale change anything. I think you'll react a little bit to what South Africa do. I'm not sure South Africa will change the game plan too much, but they'll probably try and involve Mapimpi and Colby and Larue a little bit more. But I think there'd be a change at 13. Personally, I'd love to see Bundy in, but I think Farrell was very good as well. So moving Henshaw out, bringing Farrell in. Harris was good in the warm-up games. He could come in at 13 and keep Henshaw at 12, but I don't think he'll do that. And a lot of that would probably rely on Dan Bigger, because he went off at HIA, and I'm not sure if there's been confirmation of what happened there. And you'll probably see Wyn Jones back in for Sutherland, or maybe Mako, because he was very good when he came on. And again, Tom Curry, I don't think will be bombed out. I think he's good enough, and he had a good enough second half. But the the penalties in the first half will be a worry. And Hamish nearly getting his yellow card or possibly red card if the hand didn't go out to stop him would be a worry as well. So a lot to think about before next week. But no, I don't think South Africa were not on it. I think that just the Lions had a good half. And much like I said in the first half, South Africa were just better than the Lions. I think in the second half, the Lions were just better than South Africa. It doesn't mean South Africa were bad.
Yeah, from the few pages I follow that of like South African, you know, kind of fans and media people, and the show I was on Friday, the worry was the 5-3 split, the three backs on the bench, the two Yankees and the other person I cannot, it's lost to me now, Willemse. They weren't confident that those three guys would come on and really could really make an impact. They were kind of saying that, you know, 60 minutes into this game, if South Africa need to chase the game, they don't think it's going to happen. You know, with lads being tired of starting pack or the starting backs, and then, you know, bringing the guys on like that, they just didn't feel like they would be able to combat the Lions kind of tree on their bench as well. And as you said, the front row, a lot of them thought the two props on the bench should have started, and the two props to start should have been on the bench. That was sort of a thing going forward as well. So again, going, you know, to the second test, those worries are still going to be the same. And I think the Lions now, if 60 minutes into the game, if it's a tight game and the Lions are even slightly ahead, I think they'll take massive confidence from that, and maybe we'll push on again, and that's an issue. The number 8 jersey is obviously Westie, a massive talking point in South Africa. You know, Quagga Smith, some people don't think should be getting that jersey. Obviously, Dwayne Vermeulen would have been starting, but obviously due to injury, can't. A lot of calls from Marcel Kutsia. You know, part of the reason he went back to South Africa was ideally maybe for the Lions. I'm sure that was part of the selection process. Could South Africa do with a big ball carrying it like Marcel Kutsia?
Yeah, I think they could. I think maybe it's one of the areas I think Conan was quite strong. Calvin Smith is a very good player. He's been involved in a few squads for a while. I think it's unlikely they're going to bring in Marcel Kutsia now. They probably can't with COVID restrictions. They do miss Dwayne Vermeulen. He is a leader in the team, and he has a very very accomplished role within that squad. So I think maybe that's just something they've struggled to compensate for. Not necessarily Smith's fault, but it's just, it's a very big hole to fill when you're talking about Dwayne Vermeulen.
Sorry to interrupt. Kutsia withdrew from Bulls Curry Cup game yesterday because he's still recovering from COVID and he's not gotten over the virus. So I don't see him getting in. I don't think he's played yet. I'm there to be corrected, but he's been hamstrung with injury and COVID since he arrived.
He played Rainbow Cup.
He played Rainbow
in the final,
Cup.
Didn't he?
Oh, he played fine. Yeah, sorry, but yeah. Since that,
I think he's been injury kind of.
He's been recovering from COVID, and he's still feeling the effects of that. So I don't think you see him against the Lions.
Yeah, it's a shame because he is incredibly good, and I'm sure the South Africans would use him at this stage. But from a South African point, yeah, you said you don't expect massive changes. Maybe they can't really make that many big changes. Is it just a case of doing what they normally do, just do it better in the second test? Is that too simple?
I think so. I think they'll probably try and play a bit more expansive. Like I don't necessarily think they weren't sharp for the whole game, but I said kind of in the last 15-20 minutes they started to fall off a little bit. I think someone like Andre Pollard, although I think he is unbelievable and I wouldn't not start him, I think you could kind of see that he hadn't played much rugby in the last 6 months. In that game he was a little bit kind of not at his best, let's say, in terms of playing the ball. Kicking was fine. I think he missed one penalty as well. So I would say it's probably just more a case of them backing themselves a little bit more. Players like Peter Steps-Atoy were brilliant. He has that great role of chasing an intended receiver. He breaks out of the line, he targets somebody and he hits them. And I think Daly kind of felt really the worst of it. If they can keep breaking up that link play in the Lions and force the Lions to do a little bit more solely forwards work, or find a way to involve their danger men, Mapimpi and Colbe, as I already said, even Dale Ende probably did see the most action out of any of them. But if they can find a way to involve their back line a little bit more, I think they will cause more problems for the Lions.
Speaking of the Lions, Sam, who stood out to you? Who do you thought had, you know, great games among the Lions?
The only ones I thought had great games the entirety of the game were Furlong, Itoje, and Laws, first half and second half, they were both worth mentioning at the end of the first half. And then at the end of the second half, there was a whole host of players that were definitely worth mentioning. I think Conan cemented his place for me. I don't see where the talk of Faletau coming in is, because I think Conan was brilliant. I think he did a lot of stuff very, very smartly. I don't think he was hugely the Conan on the wing, bounding down, scoring tries the way we know him. But what he did was he played a very good game at number eight. I thought, obviously, Laws, Atoji and Furlong, I don't need to say it, mention them again. They were all brilliant. Atoji, probably the best game I've ever seen Atoji play. And he's played some very, very good games in the past. So I don't think there's anything you need to say about
that. It's nice watching Atoji being like a shithouse prick, but he's on your side.
This is why you just got to embrace following England whenever Ireland aren't playing, man. It's good crack.
Like, that will never happen, Sam. Never happen. There are no way lovable rogues. I'm just saying, it's nice to see him. Like, I was nearly watching the back being like, oh, no, it's okay. He's playing for us this time. It's fine. Don't worry about it. But he was at his annoying best, wasn't he?
Brilliant. And then in the back line, I think Ali Price was brilliant. The bigger was okay. I don't think he was as good as he can be, but I think he went well. I thought Vandermeer just showed why he was there. He brought physicality and it was excellent to see. Henshaw had moments where he was very good, a good break and one or two defensive. He gets up very quickly and puts pressure on, but I don't think he had the chance to kind of shine the way he would have liked. Watson was pretty good in the first half. Didn't do enough for me to guarantee his start for next week, but I think he was good. And I thought Hogg was very, very confident at the back. He took some balls out the air very well. And like I said it last week, and I know a lot of other people have said it, Liam Williams was the pick because of how assured he was in the air. And Hogg, you know, Hogg has everything else in the counter-attacking side of things. And I didn't rate him as highly in the air, but he didn't put a foot wrong.
Just speaking of that, Sam, I may have predicted Hogg starting during the week, and Westie had some odd facial expressions to my selection of Hogg. Anything you want to say to me, Westie?
What did I say when you picked Hogg?
We both said he was wrong, in fairness. Now I give him.
I said I thought it would be hilarious if Hogg went to the third line story. That's what I said.
Yeah, you both selected Liam Williams though. Yeah. So
show you where I had Hogg written down and crossed out Liam Williams. Hey, okay. Times.
No one wants to be a hindsight Harry. I'm just saying. I just, that's all I'm saying. I accept your apology, even though you didn't say it, Westie. It's fine. I accept your apology. Sam, we were saying.
I think overall, everyone really had a pretty decent game outside of, unfortunately, Elliot Daly. I didn't think he was in any way used the way he was brought in to be, which is the 13 that was a little bit of flair outside of the hard hitting kind of bigger lads inside him. I just don't think he got that opportunity. He was absolutely rocked early on by Am as well. So, it's not easy to do that. I don't think he's got his place confirmed for next week. But, Gatlin might throw a big curveball in and stick him in again just to see what he can do, chipping his shoulder sort of thing. Biggest thing for me, though, was the impact of the bench. I think the bench was used so smartly by the Lions. I think that they brought players on when they could have made a difference. Mako came on, was so assured in the scrum, brought a really big physicality to it. Sinclair the same. And I think that was quite smart, and that was probably the winning of the game from Gatlin's point of view, is how he used the 23 instead of the 15.
Yeah, big time. It will be interesting to see what he does. I think we all agree, Elliot Daly, nothing against him, just didn't have a great day at the office. They weren't, as you said, they were using him sometimes as nearly like a first-up runner, and that's not what you're going to use Elliot Daly for. It's just not going to go well. That's where you would have the likes of a Bundy or a Henshaw sort of doing that. So, yeah, it's like as you said, Sam, a lot of it depends on Bigger. If Bigger can't play Farrell in the 10, you could see Bundy and Henshaw, then, 12-13, you could see Harris. But that's the beauty of the Lions. As fans, I wouldn't think it would be much worse chances of winning if that does happen, because you have those incredible players coming in. West, is that you would like to see change going in, or are you happy enough to kind of what will happen?
I'm happy enough either way. Obviously, there's a selfish party that wants to see some more of the Irish lads get games. I would like to see Tadhg Byrne start. I do think he really earned it, but he's not going to dislodge Laws after that performance, so... and as I said, I don't see either the second rows getting changed, so it probably will remain the same in that sense. I'd love to see Bundy play in centre. I actually think it could be really good if Bigger is out. I think my biased opinion is that the best combination is to go Farrell 10 and then Henshaw and Bundy as your centre partnership. And I think as well, just to be not biased for a second, I think Josh Adams has really earned a start in the store. Again, it's hard to see exactly where that change come in. Maybe in for Vandermeer, I'm not sure. Although, again, I think I thought he played quite well. I don't think there's any glaring reason to drop him. But yeah, it's more that there are players I'd love to see get a chance in the jersey rather than thinking that anybody needs to go from the team at the weekend.
Josh Adams didn't do enough in the warm-up games.
Yeah.
Just a 7 try.
If he had scored 8 tries, maybe. But no, just 7.
More, actually. I don't know for sure exactly how many tries it was.
It's really interesting with Josh Adams because, like, obviously he's done enough in terms of he scored more tries than anyone's ever scored in the history of rugby.
Yeah, but he missed that one game to watch his child be born over Zoom.
This was the point, though, is Gatland did say that his head wasn't definitely right. That it was an emotionally charged week for him, and that he could have been left out purely because Gatland just didn't think he was able to concentrate. It mightn't have been anything to do with ability. Like, these are people locked in a abandoned hotel for 6 weeks. You know, they'd be going stir crazy, and he's just had a child. You don't know where his head is at. And Gatland might have just said, take the week off. You've done enough to be in the starting team. You'll get your game in the second or third test. And like that could have been a conversation. And then everyone just instantly went to, how dare Gatland drop on Welshman? He hates the Irish so much.
He hates Ireland and Wales now. There's not many countries he likes left, unfortunately. But yeah, it'll be interesting when the teams get announced what changes are made. And if South Africa go back to a 6-2 split, stick with the 5-3, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they
Russell is back in contention as well, according to
that would be the ultimate curveball if Russell starts. Imagine that. That would
what
be
about
cool.
Marcus Smith 10, Russell 12?
Yeah, because Finn Russell is known for his bone-crunching tackles and hits. Yeah, that would be interesting. I would love to see it. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'd love to see it. Yeah, we'll move on from the lines. Obviously, the Olympics have started. Ireland Sevens qualified fantastically for it. Lost their opening two games against South Africa and the USA today, unfortunately. Play Kenya tomorrow. I think it's at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's late. Need to hammer Kenya, I think, by a big score to possibly qualify. But, Sam, the Ireland Sevens going to the Olympics, it wasn't really about winning it. It was about, you know, being there. Qualifying, you know, you're at the elite level, and you know, Ireland Sevens hasn't been around that long, and definitely at this level hasn't been around. So, no matter what happens, it's still a major accomplishment for these lads.
Yeah, it's absolutely massive. You can see even the posts the last few days about, you know, the originals. Like, you see a picture there with the original kind of Sevens team, and it's Wooten's in it, and Tom Daly's in it, and just kind of to go from strength to strength the way they have done, and have some of the originals still there representing them in the Olympics. It's been an amazing kind of journey for them. I think they've really gotten a lot of people on side with Sevens. I remember there was a bit of a kind of rhetoric or narrative around the Sevens this time last year where people were saying that, you know, the IRFU were pumping too much effort and time into the Sevens and that it wasn't worth it and that it was taken away, and that they were saying that Noosa Fora maybe has too much emphasis put on the Sevens and that system as a player development system instead of going through the academies. And this has just shut all that talk up and has just said, you know, this is a different code of rugby. You guys talked to Andy Friend earlier in the year and he spoke about how highly he rates Sevens converts because their work rate and their mentality and all those sort of things. So I think that this is only going to be good for Irish rugby 15s and Sevens in the long run. And to qualify for the Olympics the way they have, amazing. I've watched the two games so far. You know, they were quite unlucky against America. There was just 2 tries in quick succession in the first half that put them on the back foot. But, you know, they've got some absolute studs and it's brilliant to see. And I think that, you know, continuing on the way it is, they will definitely upset some teams, and they have upset teams in the past. Like they've beaten the States in the past in warm-up tournaments. So it's class to see. And you kind of hope that some of the lads might, like, I know Jordan Conroy is the king of Sevens in Ireland and quite an international fame because of it. And he was on Connacht's books for a while before he committed full-time to the Sevens. So some of those players like the Tom Daly's and the Wootens that got their start or got an opportunity in it, coming back into the 15s game will benefit the provinces and the international team as well. So you kind of hope to see that.
Yeah, massively. More good news during the week. We actually should really touch on this briefly. Neil Francis lost his job with the Independent due to comments made about Marcus Smith. We won't go into it too much deep into what he said because it's not worth repeating. Westy, this has been called out for a while, Neil Francis. Never really want to celebrate someone losing a job, but I think the rugby world, the rugby media world, is definitely a better spot place without Neil Francis. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. It's been a couple of instances like this. There was comments, homophobic comments made a few years ago. There was this ridiculously racist comment that I won't repeat made a few days ago. And I mean, I talked to a few people about it. Like, I'm really shocked in this day and age. Well, I'm not shocked at the who the people are, but that nobody else on a podcast would call him out, that they would let him away with that. It just shows how high in their own supply some of these people are, that they'll just let him say anything he wants so he can get clicks and they can get listens. The brilliant thing for me is that nobody noticed this until a week later, because thank Christ nobody listens to that shite anyway.
That's actually a fantastic point. Yeah, I'm very good, and Sam, I'm very good at avoiding stuff that I don't like. Sam's terrible for it. He will actively search for it, and it just doesn't make sense to me. But yeah, it's a good point, Westy. It was a couple of days later, wasn't it? But the fact
that this fuckers listen to him anyway.
The fact that it got through, and like, you know, I edit this podcast, but like the Independent, you have an actual editor hired to go through it. It will have been listened to probably once or twice before it's even published, and it still made it through. Is incredible. And the Independent here, Sam, are obviously getting credit for letting Neil Francis go, but they still had him on the books for years through the previous comments. They're not innocent in this either, are they?
Not at all. No, like I've regularly gone on rants and kind of campaigns against a lot of the stuff that's been printed around, especially around Connacht players and Irish players born abroad, or Irish qualified players. Now, you know, they've had an ongoing narrative around it for years, and it's just part and parcel of kind of their tabloid media sort of way that they act, and they just want to get the shock, and it bit them on the backside here. And you know, I've heard and I've had debates with people, friends of mine, who've kind of sided with him on this stage and being like, oh, you know, it was an ignorant comment. It was a comment made out of ignorance. He didn't realize his heritage. And I said, well, that's, you know, it's not as bad, but it's very bad, because there's a thread on a Scottish website about how he wrote an article that had zero research done. And that has been part and parcel of his punditry in the last while, as well as he just doesn't do research. And, you know, I was just more annoyed about how he was continuing to be given a platform to spew xenophobic, homophobic, now racist stuff, and if it was through ignorance, also unresearched stuff, and be paid for it. So, you know, we put a lot of research into doing this sort of podcast, and this is free. Like, I know, Smurf, you're probably raking it in the background there, but me and Westy are doing this for free, but we put effort into it, and I think that
I don't put any research.
Yeah.
I barely show up most of the time.
The fact that we get Westy once a week is incredible.
I think that there's a lot of extremely good pundits out there. There's a lot of really good podcasts over the proper.
Oh, thanks, Sam. I am great. Cheers.
But there's over the proper who you mentioned. There's the Loose Head who you mentioned, the Spotted Dove. There's so many good, you know, fan fueled medias, independent journalist media that is brilliant to listen to and really, really good. And the mainstream stuff, the big stuff that gets the financial backing, gets all the kind of front and center publishing. But actually, it's, in my opinion, not as good, and it's not as worth listening to. I think that these sort of podcasts, there's other ones, there's Barstoolers, there's loads of them that are really, really interesting and really, really good. And people put a lot of effort into them and speak very well. So I'm kind of glad to just see the back of him, because he's annoyed me too many times the last few years. And I wasted too much breath giving out about him on here and on Twitter and to my friends and stuff. I don't think people that are that ignorant should be employed consistently. The people should have to answer for their stuff that they publish.
Yeah, well, but it's interesting now to see if anyone hires him again, because, again, the problem is controversy sells. And
the keys in grey in soccer, you know, he'll get something somewhere.
And yeah, he will. But the thing is here, I've been saying it for a while, and I know Over the Hill prop Owen Harrison is a big advocate of this as well.
Yeah, I need to refer to him as Owen.
Yeah, I know.
Over the Hill prop.
Over the Hill prop. Owen, I know. Well, this is the problem. You have to tell the difference. But he's been saying this for a long time too, is you... If you ignore this stuff, it will go away. The reason that Independent pay Neil Francis for years is because people still clicked on the articles, people still listened to the podcast, people still talked about it. If you literally ignore its existence, it will cease to exist. And the same as everything else.
I agree with the sentiment of that, but I do think that people need to be answerable. And I think the people that spew... In the past, he's been homophobic and xenophobic. This is the first instance of out and out racism that I can see, and he's playing it off, and people are playing it off like it was ignorance. I don't believe that it was.
Sam got into an argument with you and McKenna about this. This is how bad it got.
I don't believe it was because of his history, but the xenophobic stuff surrounding, you know, Connacht players in particular and Irish players that weren't born in Ireland, it needed to be called out. And I agree that you have to let certain things go in order to ignore them, they'll go away. But people have been given a platform, and I think that you can't just spew hate without being called out for it either. And unfortunately, I am the exact person that those sort of things are aimed at, the person that will get riled up by it. And I will, and I'll defend people, because I'm like Batman.
You are. I've often said that about you, Sam. You are like Batman. Right, Westy? Right?
Yeah.
He's a playboy billionaire who fights crime at night.
Yeah, Sam. Like, Sam's always out there in Galway dressed in black leather. Do you know? I'm just not sure he's doing the same thing Batman's doing.
Black spandex, man. I can't afford leather.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you're a billionaire, Sam, of course you can. Come on, you got to stick with it. But yeah, I think we'll wrap it up there, boys. We've plenty to talk about. We got it covered. Some positive, some not. But we will be back again next week to hopefully recap Lions clinching the series with their win number 2 and Bundy scoring the winning try in the 88th minute. Hopefully. We'll see. But boys, appreciate it as always, and we'll chat to you next week.
Bye.
Cheers, guys.